Hi everybody, welcome to Wrong Term Memory. My name's Jack.
And my name's Colin, and it's a delight to be back talking to you. Jack, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. We're recording this on a Thursday evening. I've just finished work for the day. In fact, I've just finished work for the week, so I'm actually better than okay. I'm very good.
Yeah. It's been a while, to be honest, that we've done a Wrong Term Memory recording, because you were not well, I was not well, blah, 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 all the life stuff sort of it gets in the road and things get put in the back burner. But you put a wee post out the other night just saying, we're going to be back. So this, I don't know whether just to put this out for patrons and just fuck the public people.
I would. Fuck them.
Yeah. And then maybe, where are we? Maybe put something in April or something for them.
Aye, let's just look after the patrons, because they've been pretty good with us and patient and stuff and understanding. Nobody's fucked off and left us or anything, so I would, let's just keep it for
like
them.
I'm really surprised about that. I would have perhaps left if a creator that was subscribing to hadn't posted in a couple of weeks.
I think the thing is, we're just both really, really popular.
Well, I hate that.
And people like us. For folks that might not have heard this story, Jack was recently on a night out with some of the Heart and Hand lads, and a couple of the kind of, one in particular, one of the new podders that has joined the team recently, yeah. Absolutely fanboyed Jack most of the evening, and Jack absolutely loved it and adored it.
It actually made me want to go home.
And you know what, the guy's a lovely guy, but he just
well, it was lovely up. But he was pissed because I turned up like a couple of hours after everybody else. They'd been out all day, pissed, like, I don't want to sound like a dick, but like huggy and like, all right, yeah, I love this, I love that.
You're my favourite podder. I think you're brilliant. I listen to you every week.
And I honestly, like, I'm leaving kidding on. See, for about the first hour I was out, I was thinking about just grabbing one pint and just going home.
I was at a 40th that night and I missed it, and I'm devastated that I missed it. Because I'd love to just have watched you in that situation, because I get it quite a lot. I don't get the adulation.
I get it quite a lot. Yeah.
People come up to me at Ibrox and say hello and stuff like that, and always, hey, how you doing and stuff like that. And it amazes me. Like, I don't put pictures of myself on Twitter, because I just think you're inviting abuse, basically putting pictures of yourself on Twitter. Uh-huh. But the amount of people that pass me at Ibrox and stuff, especially when we don't win or we drop points or whatever, good luck in that card pod today, mate. Don't know how you're going to do that one and stuff like that. And I just don't know how the people know who I am, but they seem to. Some of them do. But I always like it. I think it's nice. But
it's nice. I'm not denying that it's not nice. It's a me thing.
Yeah. Listen, I work from home.
It's a total me thing.
I work from home every single day and I live alone, Jack. I'll take any sort of interaction I can get.
Yeah, fair enough. So, For the patrons, right, we've really dove in and like studied and done all sorts of research, and we've went to one website that I found about an hour ago. It's a HubSpot thing.
HubSpot?
It's a blog at HubSpot.com.
Okay.
The title of the article that we're going to work our way through is 20 Creative Interview Questions. So right. I'm just going to ask you any of the questions, bro.
Right, okay. So you told me we're going to do this, but I haven't looked at the questions. So
I've only read the first one, like, because okay. I just scrolled down, read the first one and thought that'll do. So we'll both sort of answer them. I'm going to admit there is sample answers on this page.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm going to read them, I'm not going to jump ahead. I'm just going to read the questions. I'll ask you first. And you just give me your answer, because how many interviews have you been in your life?
Oh God, I don't know, 20 maybe.
See, that's mad, because I've only ever had 3 interviews, and one of them was for the job that I've got just now.
Right, okay.
And the first one was for the job I've got just now, and I never got it. And then the third one was for like the sort of job above mine.
Right.
And I never got that. So
no, I've worked for four companies that, like, as an adult, and I've had at least four or five or six different roles at each place. So that's all those interviews that I've done. I've had a couple of ones that I've not got as well. But I'm not bad at interviews. I've got, I think I've probably got about 80% of the interviews I went for.
Yeah, yeah. So, and how many times have you interviewed people?
Oh, hundreds.
Yeah, so, so this is where you have a massive advantage because, yeah, like, you're going to know what to, what you'd want people to hear.
Yeah, I know how to play the wanker work game quite well.
Uh-huh.
Like, I
know big time.
So,
big time.
Yeah, I've got, we used to have, like, example questions we used to ask, like, if you're a bit of furniture, what would you be? And you were looking for answers like, I'd be a bookcase because I'm full of knowledge. Yeah. Or if you were if you're a vegetable, what would you be? I'd be an onion because there's many layers to me.
Right, okay, so it's all total fucking horrendous garbage.
I ran an assessment centre once in a previous job, and it was probably the most kind of wokey, wanky place I've ever worked. And one of their final interview question was always, jobs at a certain level, the final interview question was always, a big important thing here is our personality and our sense of fun. Tell us your favourite joke.
Right.
And 99% of people used to play it safe and tell just knock-knock jokes. Yeah. This guy told a joke about the tsunami. Literally thousands of votes need. And he told a joke about that. One of the funny things about the job? No, I didn't.
He wasn't getting it anyway.
I've had one of the funny ones I always remember was I was interviewing for a sales job, and I asked the candidate, do you have sales targets in your current job and how'd you get on with them? And said, yeah, I do. We do have sales targets. Well, as you know, I currently work in a petrol station, and our main target is lunchtime meal deals. So we've got to upsell. So if somebody comes in and they pick up a sandwich and come to the counter, or they pick up Chris or they pick up a drink, I'll try and say to them, do you know, instead of buying that, if you could get a sandwich and you could get this, etc., for it on an extra pound or whatever, and we get points for each meal deal we sell, and that's kind of our main target. I said, that's really good. That's brilliant. How'd you do with those targets? Not very well. Right? So one, right? Why are you telling me that? I've got no idea. You could tell me anything. So tell me you're good. I said, right, so what's the problem with it? Why do you struggle with it? And he goes, well, the problem is that it's all the lunchtime meal deals, and for the last year I've done constant night shift. I love the fact.
I'm so fucking none.
Yeah, so I was like, okay. didn't know what to say to that guy.
So as an interviewer, mate, like, do you see the formulaic answers? Because I always get told, like, one of my pals worked in recruitment, and he used to recruit for quite high level, like oil and sort of type of business, and he always said, like, go for the star techniques, which star, I've now forgot. Situation,
task, aim and result.
Yes.
I always go for advanced star, which is, I call pirate star, right?
Right.
Absolute fucking wanker, Jack.
I know.
That is star with an extra R at the end. So you do your situation, your task, your aim and your result, and then you do your reflection. And what you do for that is you answer every question, and then at the end of it, you say, now on reflection, if I was in this situation again, I would do this. And it's a really good way of picking up any points you've dropped at the start of it.
Right, okay.
So,
because it was like a mad percentage. It was like, set up the situation, 10% of the story. What's T again?
Situation, so what were you doing?
So you set it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, situation, target, aim,
the
result.
The big thing is what you done.
That's the biggest thing you can do in it, is use the word I, never use the word we. Talk about what you did to make it happen, what difference you had in this whole process, etc. These assessment centres are all just, there's points allocated for each part of the question, and that's why that extra R thing comes in handy, because if you do that bit, if you've not explained the situation very well, not explained the task very well, we could give you some more points for showing your recognition of what could have been done better, sort of thing.
So, like, when I got, I've only been in the three interviews, you get an interview, there's the three people sitting there, and there's the wee HR lady, and she's fucking get the pen out. Is she marking points? Like at that point,
Not at that point. She's probably just taking notes of your answers. Usually at the end, you'll sit down, you'll do like a,
and then they sort of
you'll do a group scoring exercise where you score everybody together, sort of thing. You do it kind of as a group, so it's consistent.
Right. Okay. I need to remember that, like, because see, after I get knocked back for the sort of coordinator position, and I'll admit, I was positive I was going to get it.
Yeah.
I was fucking positive I was going to get it. I thought I fucking smashed the interview at the park, and then the colleague that I worked with got it, and I was like fucking distraught, and almost ever since I went, I've never want to fucking go for another interview again in my work. Like, I'll go for other interviews, but I don't want to go for an interview because I kind of felt like, again, probably like without any basis in reality, I felt that they liked her better.
Yeah, well, knowing you like I know you, if you think you did brilliant, then I think you probably did do brilliant. But if someone else turns up on the day and does better than you, there's nothing you can do about that. You can give it your absolute all, be brilliant, but if they're just that little bit more brilliant, and also, and I say this as somebody that doesn't do any recruitment anymore, I'm out of it, so I'm quite happy to say it. If it's an internal thing, it's absolutely not just based on the interview and what you've done.
Of course it's not,
it's based on
their fucking better as fuck, yeah. But she was like really pally with one of the interviewers, basically, like texting and all that sort of, all that shit.
Yeah.
And I'm positive that, absolutely positive that's
my score. Honestly, it comes into it. There's always that sort of stuff. You look at absence, you look at how long they've been there, you look at how much you think you'd like to work with that person. There's all sorts. It's never just based on that sheet of questions and those points, because the pointing system is quite open to. There's no direct definition if you score a 2 or a 3 for this section.
Right.
You could do exactly the same as somebody else, but if I wanted to boost you up to a 3 to make you better, I could justify that quite easily.
Because it went external, so there was like 6 candidates, and I'd like basically like 4 of them are fucked. They're not getting it.
No.
They're just no, because they've not done, they don't know the organisation, the staff, the people. Yeah. Like,
plus, you need to offer them more money usually. It's usually cheaper to hire internally.
Well, that's the thing, because I work in public sector, that's not the way it works.
Ah, well, fair enough then.
To be fair, like, wait a minute, there might be a salary range, but because of the people, all the people that are applying for it are going to be at like a 6.1 rather than a 6, or whatever, however you scale it, they'll all be at the top end of the wage scale, or everybody that applies for it.
They could not
hire a person and then pay them a 5.9, like pay them like $8,000 less than.
Yeah, see, that does happen in the private sector.
Like, see, that doesn't it doesn't.
I've worked in places with sort of like $6,000-$7,000 of a difference between people doing the same job.
Well, that's mad. Like, again, that it's obviously boring as fuck for people that are listening, but it's quite interesting for me to speak about, because at another institution that is similar to us, there are. It's just a technical difference. It's a naming difference, basically. There is a XY advisor or an XY lecturer.
Right, okay.
And they do the exact same job.
They get paid more.
Exact same job. And the XY lecturer gets paid $9,000 more than the person sitting next to him.
Yeah, that's not cool. There's lots of that. Right?
Like, it's absolutely... Like, I apply for a job in a place, and I actually missed the interview because I was off sick at the time, and I missed the email, missed the interview, and I'm so glad that I didn't go for the interview, because I would have took the job, but the place is supposedly absolutely toxic as fuck because of that. Yeah.
Can you cope with toxicity for an extra $8,000? I don't know.
But that's the thing, they were advertising for the advisor.
Right, not the lecturer.
So, not the lecturer, because the lecturer, that was like a historic contract thing.
Things like that happen all the time, man. It sucks. If you're on the wrong side of it, it sucks.
Aye. Boring as fuck, just talking about work. 15 minutes in. Right, so, let's just get to the first question, Colin.
Go for it.
Right. So you walk in, sit down, and I'm there. Colin, how would you solve problems if you were from Mars?
If I was from Mars?
That's what I
am. I'm in Mars or I'm in the UK?
Like, I'm in, just I'm as if you were from Mars, so I imagine you've come down for the interview.
I wouldn't answer the question straight away. I would ask a bunch of questions about the situation and where I'm at, because basically I probably don't know enough about what problems on Earth there generally is, sort of thing. So I think that's one where you just have to, they're probably looking for you to delve deeper into it, ask more questions, and then just give something quite generic, especially when they're not telling you what the actual problem is.
Right, so I'm going to read a little bit of the sample answer here, right? This is supposedly to demonstrate problem-solving ability under bizarre circumstances.
Okay.
So an answer can show whether you can enter a brand new workplace, that's what it's getting at,
right,
environment, like, and then evaluate it fairly before offering solutions. So yeah, I'd imagine you're asking the questions about the company that you've went into.
Like if they say
would fulfill that criteria.
Yeah, if they say that we've got an issue here with atmosphere and we're looking for somebody that can make this place a better place to work.
Oh, that's almost what they said here. So like, if you were in Mars, I'm going to have different problems from...
Yeah, from Earth. I'd want to know kind of, well, why is that? What is atmosphere? Because atmosphere to me in Mars is something very different. It's something that stops me from walking on the ground because of gravity and all this sort of disease. They're just looking for you to be switched on and be able to show an understanding of just something different from the norm as to why you want to work here.
That was a great answer, Colin. And if this sounds a bit clunky, it's because there's an edit point. I had to do something for 15 minutes. So, but anyway, we'll move on to the second question, Colin.
Okay, let's do it.
What do you think of garden gnomes?
Some of these interview questions are so wank. I think they are a very, very good thing, although I don't have any. I think they're important for people for a number of reasons. A garden gnome, especially if you live alone. I live alone just now, and sometimes we're quite depressing and upset coming back to your house and nobody there to greet you. So if you like gnomes and you walk in your garden gate and there's five or six smiling faces looking at you, I think that's quite warm and welcoming. I think they also act a little bit like scarecrows. So that's also a good thing for you if you happen to be growing crops or growing any flowers or plants in your garden as well. And it's just a nice bit of decoration. It's not necessarily my taste. I wouldn't have any, but they're certainly good for the people that like them.
Yeah, so this was asked by Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's, right, okay. That's an American company, isn't it?
Yeah. Are they like a food company or something?
Like, I think it's like a... type thing. No, I think it's like a Whole Foods type place. Does healthy food and stuff like that.
Okay. So again, this is to ultimately test your ability to handle a curveball.
Okay. So
again, I'm not an interviewer. I think you answered that quite well. But the sort of, not a standard answer, but like the answer that's given here would be like kind of jokey, the kind I'm looking for here. So if I could get a job as one, then I probably wouldn't be here talking to you today.
Right, okay. All those wonderful garden gnome jobs out there.
Yeah. Again, like any interview I've been in, it's all been competency-based questions.
Yeah.
So I've been like, tell me about a time that you did this or handled this or done this. It's never been the like fucking gnomes or the wombles.
Yeah, so I've had three promotions since I started working for them during lockdown. I've had three promotions in a row in my work, and being interviewed now remotely is so much easier than face to face. Like the interviews I've had, I've sat here with like a jumper and a shirt on and a pair of shorts down below, quite comfy. I have had all my notes on post-it notes for every competency question I think I can get asked.
Just there out of sight.
In front of me in the monitor. Just look over at them, get yourself a little help and come back again. It's so more relaxed and so much easier now, I think. Like, I'm not sure, obviously I could adapt to it, but I would hate my next interview, whenever that may be, to be back to face-to-face. I'm glad they'll probably be remote because, honestly, it's just a completely different game. It's so much easier.
So does it totally change the game being able to hide your notes like all around the fucking behind the screen, basically?
Yeah, well, everywhere I've worked, you've been allowed to, they've said bring notes into an interview, it's not a problem, but having them in front of you and then like rifling through them and stuff like that, I think that's more off-putting than anything else. But because they're not actually with you, I can have them actually stuck to one side of the monitor and I'm still staring at the camera, I'm still holding conversation, but my eyes are just going over little pointers and little kind of dots and little notes of what I wanted to remember, and that'll kind of spark me off and start things. So it's really helpful. It really, really is.
One of the guys in my work was, he went for a job at another place, and he was in France for the interview.
Right.
And couldn't set a laptop up, not a laptop, the iPad up, like fucked everything up. That it was like the iPad was looking at shorts.
Jesus.
He was an absolute cunt of it. And he knew it as soon as he left that he was fucked.
Yeah, so you all just know when it happens, you know.
It made him look like an idiot, basically.
Yeah, oh well.
Right, okay, I know the answer to this one.
Okay.
Why are manholes round?
Why are manholes round?
Yeah.
I believe manholes are round because it's kind of the optimum shape for somebody fitting through them, get up and down them. It's also probably the easiest shape for the cover to be removed. And the covers generally are quite heavy, and if you have to move them, you can roll them because really they're just a big wheel that makes it much easier for the person installing them and stuff like that. That would be kind of my main thinking as to why they're round. There's also just probably a piece of historical first that comes into this as well, where the first manhole ever made happened to be round for no real reason, and people have just adapted that and kept it that way ever since.
Yeah, so a round manhole cover, it just kind of when there's maintenance been done, it kind of just fall through type thing.
Oh, but if you angle it, it won't go down.
Type thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is that the reason? Is that actually the reason?
Yeah. Whereas if you've got a square cover, you can kind of fit diagonally and fall in.
Right. That's pretty clever. I quite like that.
If you've got that manhole cover, there's no angle that it will just fall in.
No, that's quite a good idea.
Yeah. I knew the answer. I didn't know the answer to that as an interview question. Just sort of a bit of trivia, basically, mate. Yeah. So you've been given an elephant, Colin.
Right.
You can give it or sell it. You can give it away or sell it. So what do you do with it? Do you give it away or sell it?
I would sell it. I would train it up, first of all, because elephants are really good at shooting water out their trunk. Their trunk is really like a big hose. So I would maybe train it up on how to wash cars and sell it to a car wash company. And you could have manual car wash or kind of drive-through car wash or elephant car wash. And that could be their USP going forward, the only car wash company with an elephant. Because I think that'd be pretty cool, especially if you'd imagine having kids to take them out in the car. And then I'm going to go see the elephant and get the car washed. And you've got the elephant with his big trunk going, and soaking your car in that. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, again, this is one that's got no right answer. The candidate might say, I don't have a place to put an elephant, so I'd probably send it on vacation.
Yeah, dude, make use of its skills. Yeah, I would tell it lots of stuff because they never forget. That would be a good thing as well, because they've got such good memories and such good brains, these elephants, that they just don't forget things. So I would do that. I would just tell it all my secrets.
Your interview is, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be and why?
I would be, I'll be honest, I've not got a great bunch of knowledge about trees and some different types of trees. I'm going to answer this rather, I'm going to describe this with characteristics of trees rather than actual names of tree. I would like to be a tree that's kind of middle-aged. I'd like to be a middle-aged tree, so pretty tall. Been there quite a while, but still going to be there quite a lot longer, and still got space to grow, because I think I've got quite a lot of knowledge. I think I'm here for this job because I'm suited for it. I've got all the desired characteristics that are on the kind of interview sheet, interview process, the advert for the job. I think it's a job that I can grow in the role as well and add more to that knowledge and make a difference and get bigger or grow, like you say. So I'd like to be a sort of middle-aged, medium-type tree in the forest with scope to get bigger and better.
That's basically the bullshit answer I'm looking for. Aye. I would be an oak tree because I'm strong and dependable, kind of like what you were saying there. Like, I'm sort of... I'm middle-aged because I've got experience and I've done this and I've grown for years, but I've also got room to grow. Yeah, that type of shit is exactly... This was for Walgreens, which again is very American.
That's a chemist, yeah.
Is that a chemist?
That's a chemist. Or they wouldn't say that. They would say a pharmacy.
A pharmacy.
Pharmacy. But yeah, I'm fine with that answer. That's cool.
That's pretty good. If you were a dessert, what would you be?
I'd probably be the Sahara Desert. I'm only joking.
Oh, 2 points. Charlie, they put 2 points on Colin's thing because that was a cracker.
I would be a bowl of ice cream because I'm not some fancy, complicated, difficult individual. I'm just something that's pretty good and pretty satisfying, and I come in lots of different sort of flavours and textures and choices. So I'd go a bowl of ice cream.
Oh, man, again, it's just like basically what they're looking for. Like, I would be a cheesecake because they're versatile, but can be adapted to different tastes if you add toppings, which you can do with ice cream as well.
Yeah, listen, I'm not proud of being good at this. It just means I'm an absolute wanker, so it's fine.
like, again, back to your interviews, you obviously talked about the guy that worked night shift and couldn't sell any lunch deals. Is there any other sort of just wild answers that spring to mind? You were just sitting there like, why would you say that in a job interview?
Not so much. Well, there was one that comes out of that category where, so I was interviewing a guy for a contact centre job once, and he actually did really, really well. He answered a lot of the questions to a good standard, and there was a really good chance, depending on how others did, that he was going to get offered a role. And at the end of it, always ask him if he'd get any questions for me about the job, about the company, or anything like that. And he turned around and he said, "Aye, Colin, I do. I noticed that there's Saturday working involved in this, and it's like two Saturdays a month. I need to tell you, how does it work for shift swaps? Because I'm a Celtic man, and I like going to the games."
Right. Minus 200 points.
Minus 500 points, yeah. And I just was like, oh my God. I was like, well, you'll be lucky. We've got loads of Celtic men here and loads of Rangers men as well, and a lot of them have got season tickets. And what they kind of do is they work with each other, basically. Your best thing to do would be come in here and become pals with a Rangers fan, basically, and do shift swaps for each other so you can go to your games. That's kind of how the guys work it. So, that's good, because I wouldn't want to miss the games, you know. And you know what? Like, as a professional environment, you should be able to say, like, what TV support and stuff like that, but you just shouldn't, especially in Glasgow, because no good can come really of revealing to another guy who's interviewing you that you either support the team he loves or the team he hates. So I'm surprised at that. I asked a question in an interview once, tell me about a mistake you made in work and what did you do to rectify it? And the girl told me that she currently worked in a fish and chip shop.
And sorry.
I ordered a gluten-free fish supper, and she gave him a normal fish supper by mistake, and only realised after he'd left. And I said, "What did you do to rectify it?" I thought she was maybe going to tell me about a new process they put on the till to kind of make it obvious it was gluten-free, maybe putting the gluten-free fish in a different section of the fryer.
Did she run down the street?
Yes. So, she was lovely, she was really good. But you know what? Here's the thing, right? If you've only worked in a fish and chip shop or a petrol station, you're only going to have limited answers and experience to draw upon anyway. So, you can't really penalise them for that.
But I do feel like it must be particularly hard to, like, see if I went for a job in like a company like yours.
Yeah.
I've got plenty of experience. I could imagine that within 3, 6, 9 months that I could be trained up and do the job and be competent. but I don't know how I would be able to transpose a lot of the skills that I have to the questions that we're getting asked. I would struggle with that. Like I says, the guy that I used to, that one of my pals that used to work in recruitment, he had guys that would come to him every 6 to 9 months looking for a new job because they were just fantastic at interviews.
Yeah.
Fantastic at it. Get a job, make money, I'm bored, move to an odd job and just go into interviews and absolutely smash it out of the park every time.
There's a lot of people, they're quite famous for it in the kind of Glasgow contact centre scene, because there is so many contact centres in and around Glasgow. There is a lot of people who will apply for a contact centre job, get the job, do the training, because the training's generally between 4, 6, sometimes 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Do the training and then quit off. And start all over again. And they're basically just professional trainers. They just get trained and never actually do a proper day's work and look around all the contact centres. It's a crazy lifestyle. It's not one for me, but there is people that have done that I've spoke to and interviewed and they've left, and then I've heard from somebody else that they've now turned up somewhere else after that, somewhere else. It's wild, but some people do live like that.
I could not go through that. Question number 7. Right, Colin, we've finished the interview, mate.
Right.
So you walk outside and you find a lottery ticket and it's got 10 million quid on it. What do you do with it? Or what do you do? Not what do you do with it. What do you do?
Cash in. I find it. You know what? Sorry. Okay, I find it. So it's not actually mine, is it? Okay, let me start that again, because I've made myself into a dishonest person there, haven't I?
Well, not quite according to the sample answer here.
So I'll tell you what, this answer would be, I would do exactly what I would do if I had bought a lottery ticket and won £10 million. I would just take a pause, because I've always thought that if I won big money in the lottery, the worst thing I could do start guzzling champagne and flying to Vegas and partying and stuff like that, because I think that's just a bad way to start your new life. So I would maybe just pause for a month or so, take it all in, speak to some experts, do a bit of planning, and make sure during that month's time that there's not any sob stories in the paper or news around there about MD that had a winning lottery ticket and lost it. And as long as I haven't heard anything like that for a month, I would then cash in the lottery with my little kind of newfound knowledge of information about what the best way to treat a win like that is and start my new life. And I'd probably try and do it in 3 different ways. You've got fund money, you've got saving / investment money, and you've got donating money at that point.
Again, $10 million.
Yeah.
I would travel, donate to charity, and provide for my family. Okay. However, I'd still want to work for your company.
Oh, fuck, man, I never said
that. If I found $10 million outside, mate, I'd fucking never speak to you again.
I'd buy your company and shut it, mate.
But again, you sort of had a couple of key markers there about donation, contemplation, providing, blah, blah, blah. What's the colour of money?
Nowadays, and hopefully sooner rather than later, digital doesn't actually have a colour, it just exists on a screen. I'm a kind of a believer that the days of cash are over, and they can't happen quickly enough for me. I think probably most of the cash in circulation is used for illegal means and not for the right things. It's also dirty, it's full of germs, it's a nuisance to carry with you. Nobody likes paying for something and having loads of change back in their pocket. With having digital pay services on your phone now, and obviously contactless debit cards, there's no need for cash. So your currency, your money can be any colour you want, really, but ideally for me, it wouldn't be a colour at all, because it will never exist on a screen.
Right, okay. So again, this question was written a couple of years ago, so for an American readership. So you might expect an American to say green.
Right, sure.
But what you're looking for is somebody to say, it depends on what country you're in.
All right, okay. I did kind of say that.
No, you kind of get it now. So you're shipwrecked on a deserted island. This is like fucking Desert Island Disc. So all your human needs, like food, water, that's all taken care of. But you've got to take two items. What two items would you want to have with you?
Okay.
This is a question from, this is companies like Yahoo, so it kind of dates it, but companies like Google might ask us, yeah.
Yeah, they probably would. So I'm taken care of in terms of food and water, human needs, shelter. I would take then with me, I would take my iPhone 14 Pro. And the reason I mention what model it is because the iPhone 14, I believe, was the first or the second iPhone that had a built-in satellite phone on it. So I could get connected anywhere in the world with it and still be able to contact people and arrange my rescue and speak to people and stuff like that. Second thing I would bring is a mechanical charger. So something that charges the phone that just got like a wee wind-up thing that I use to do it. Generate my own power to do that because I'd probably have the iPhone as a bigger necessity than the food or the water to me, to be honest. But yeah, that's how I would answer that one, I think.
Yeah, pretty perfect again. So you don't want something that just says, I want my iPod, because obviously it would run out of battery.
Yeah.
I want somebody that will say, I'd bring a Wi-Fi enabled laptop, which is your super phone, with a wind generator to charge the battery.
Wind generator, right, okay.
Aye, something like that.
Aye, that's good.
And a lighter, so that you can keep warm at night.
Okay, that's fair enough. The last time I was involved in recruitment, before lockdown, in my old role, we did a situation like that in every interview, in all the assessment centres. We would interview them and do all the different parts separately, and then bring them together into a group.
Right.
And do a situation like this. You're on a plane, it crashes in a desert island, and you've got 15 items, and we had like little props for all 15 items that we put on the table. So there was like a mobile phone there, there was a bottle of water, there was little miniatures of alcohol from the plane, and loads of bits and pieces, biscuits and stuff like that. Right. And as a group, they had to decide which 5 of the 15 were the ones they would keep and have with them on the desert island. Oh. And like this, there's no right answer. It was all about just watching them working together.
Right, okay. See, I've never had to do any sort of group working interviews.
Yeah, it's interesting because you always see somebody, you see one try to take over. You see one trying to not take over, but be the best. Like, and then you also see somebody try to be the kind of the enabler. Like, you've not said much, Claire. What do you think? And stuff like that. It's weird how people work.
I remember
my favourite bit.
Karen telling me she went for a job interview at Tesco or something like that years ago. And she got asked to do group work. And one of the group tasks was they were given 7 balloons or 8 balloons and asked to create the highest tower.
Oh, right, okay, wow. But balloons?
Nothing but balloons, basically. Oh,
God, what the hell?
Sounds fucking horrendous.
John Lewis used to interview people, and part of their interview process was he used to give them Lego and ask them to build a house and then talk through why they built the house the way they built it.
Right.
So there's a lot of wankiness out there. When I auditioned for Big Brother,
it's so bizarre to me that working in John Lewis or wherever, where that sort of critical group think working together really comes into it. Is it just to, so obviously you've interviewed hundreds of people, so how does that have an impact on how much you can fucking sell tellies or whatever?
So the Lego and what your house looks like really doesn't matter. It's just a prop, and it's the whole idea behind it is the Lego's a distraction, and you're going to build something with the Lego, and you might not make the best of thing the Lego. You're probably going to make something that's pretty shit because it's just a bunch of random blocks. There's no instructions, and you're building it under pressure. Right. So the whole idea is about seeing how you cope under pressure when you've got to think about more than one thing. And then when you've got this shitty house built, how do you describe that and make it sound appealing and good? Because when you're on the phones trying to sell cushions and pillows and sofas and stuff like that, you're going to be selling something that you maybe can't really see it properly. You certainly can't touch it. You can't feel it. So how would you describe it to that customer? And how would you make it sound appealing?
Right, okay.
And when you're in a contact centre, you've got people shouting at you about how long you've been on the call. You've got people telling you you're supposed to be on your breaks now, you got off that call, finish up, you've run it too long, etc. You've got 20 calls in the queue and you're worried about them because you know you're not going to be busy. All these distractions go on that take you away from the call. So do something in an interview where you have to think about only one thing at once helps as well.
It's like adaptability, focus, all that sort of stuff.
All that nonsense, yeah.
Right. We'll get to question number 10 and we'll call it a day. We'll maybe revisit the next 10.
Okay.
Next week or whatever. So, are you a hunter or a gatherer? This was asked by Dell.
Okay. I think the answer I'd love to tell you is that I'm a hunter and I'm going to go and I'm going to find the biggest and best thing that's going to make the biggest difference to you. But I'm not going to say that because it's not really accurate. And being a hunter is quite a dangerous thing to do. There's a lot of risk with being a hunter. You hunt the wrong thing, it'll end up hunting you and then you're gone. Whereas as a gatherer, you might not be bringing home the biggest thing in the jungle, but it would be consistently bringing home good things. And you'd be doing that for longer and making a difference to more people. So I am ultimately more of a gatherer. And I think although it's not as appealing as a hunter, I think it's more essential overall.
Yeah, pretty much kind of hit the nail on the head again. But again, this is job specific. But for Dell, they would kind of want you to more say that you were a gatherer because you'd want your candidate to say, I enjoy collecting critical data, SEO, insights, my content, reaching goals. I'd rather gather that than hunt. So, again, I'm just so glad that I've never really... I hate interviews as it is, but I'm really glad that I've never been asked any of these questions. I actually want to ask you number 11, because I think I know what your honest answer would be.
Okay.
But I want to see what you say here, right? So if you could only read one book for the rest of your life, what would it be?
It would be my favourite book. And it would be also pretty helpful, and I think it would help me a lot if it was the only book I could ever read for the rest of my life. And it's Down and Out in Paris and London by George Orwell. With a couple of reasons, like it's my favourite book. I read it once a year anyway, so reading it more often than that wouldn't be a bad thing. And it's a travel diary of his time living in Paris and London as a tramp with no money, working really bad jobs and really having a really bad standard of life. And I think if I get your job, it's going to improve my life quite a lot. But reading this book would keep me grounded. It's what could happen if I stepped out of line or ever kind of let my guard down.
See, I knew that was your favourite book, and you've managed to justify it there quite well, I think. Do you know George Orwell got shot in the throat in the war?
Yeah, and yes, I did know that back when he was called Eric Arthur Blair.
Oh, and as far as I know, there are no recordings of him, and he used to be on the like BBC radio and all that all the time because of the BBC archive fucked it and just lost everything.
Oh, so there's no actual record of his voice or anything like that?
There's no record of his voice or nothing like that, no.
Yeah, I've read a few of his books. So I've read a couple, some of them are stinkers, but obviously everybody knows 1984, but the Down and Out in Paris and London is just, it's just wonderful. It's the most vivid of descriptions you could ever imagine. It's great.
Yeah, I've never read. I've listened to Animal Farm. That was Orwell.
Yeah,
too. And like, I have downloaded 1984, and I tend to listen to audiobooks when I go to bed, and I've never made it past the first chapter.
It's not an easy read. It's good though. I got more out of going. I went and saw a theatre production of 1984 in the Citizens a number of years ago with our mutual friend Howard, and I got more out of that watching it than I got out of reading the book. But it's good. It's made a lot of predictions that have came true, really.
And do you know that, like, his wife had, 1984 minus 50 years. So in 1934, she had wrote like a short story type thing called 1984.
I didn't know that. No, that's pretty cool.
But all her predictions were positive and like lovely and how good 1984 was going to be. And right. he just basically took the antithesis of that and wrote his 1984.
That's pretty cool. I think he was a bit of a shagger, George Orwell.
It might have been.
I think he was. I always get mixed up with when I talk about the personal lives. Who was the guy that wrote The Crucible? Arthur Miller. Arthur Miller is the playwright around about, and he was married to Marilyn Monroe and done all sorts of shagging and stuff. But I think George Orwell was the same.
See all these seminal authors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've read any other books like all the way through, apart from, like I says, 1984. And even then, I might be mixing up that with some, like a film I watched or something.
But I think that's necessarily a bad thing, mate. You read a lot of books, so it's not like you're not reading and you're not taking stuff in, you just aren't reading those offers, so it's up to you, isn't it?
No, of course, no, I wasn't putting myself down, I'm just saying, like, it just seems... Again, as far as I know, there are studies that show that 1984 is the most lied about book that people say they've read.
I would have thought it was War and Peace, but 84 makes sense because your average idiot could claim 84, probably couldn't claim they've read War and Peace.
Because 84 is a big brother and cameras and there's a man.
CCTV, isn't it?
Basically. Yeah. So you can like, with... like a couple of sentences, you can kind of like fap it off.
There's a, I can't remember what it's called, there's a website now, and it's kind of like a Netflix type thing where you sign up for a month, you get unlimited access to it.
I know what you're talking about. The
It basically shortens books.
Aye, it's like 7 minutes. I don't know what it's called, but it's like shortens everything down to 7 minutes, basically.
Yeah, like, but it focuses mainly on like self-help books and business books and all that sort of stuff, self-improvement books, and it just basically somehow captures the key messages and drills them into you in 7 minute, 10 minute, 20 minute bits. And
I am almost positive that a couple of years ago, I downloaded the app thinking I was going to get a free trial and then it wanted fucking details and stuff like that. So I just went like, no, I'm not interested.
It'd be interesting to see if it worked, because the one thing that stops you doing things is time. So if it worked, it's pretty clever. I'm not sure how you would get the benefit of a 600-page book in 7 minutes. And the fact that me and you can't remember the name of the website maybe tells its own story. But I think it's
disappeared because, well, you can get full books on Audible.
Aye. And you can also now, you can tell ChatGPT to just summarise a book for you and it does it. So
Exactly. What's the last book you read?
Book I read was a book about pop music in the early 2000s. It was called...
Because you're quite an avid reader.
Yeah, I read every day.
Listen to stuff.
Books. Where is that? It's called Reach for the Stars, 1996 to 2006, Fame, Fallout, and Pop's Final Party. And it's all about how pop music changed in the early 2000s and it was never really the same after that.
Right, and who wrote that?
It's written by a guy called Michael Cragg.
Right.
It's Michael Chagg, I think. Michael Chagg.
Kinda rings a bell, but...
Yeah, and I've just started a new one called Kleptopia by Tom Burgess, and it's about how dirty money is conquering the world, and it was recommended on the Rest is Entertainment podcast, which is why I grabbed it.
Do you listen to the Rest is Entertainment?
I listen to every episode. In work now, when we have meetings and there's always like 5 minutes at the start, we do quick catch-ups and stuff like that. 90% of my personality is stuff I've heard in that podcast. Just passing off mad stuff as my own knowledge.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. Really, really well done. I think it's really, really good.
It's all built on the success of The Rest is History.
The Rest is History and politics and the football and stuff, yeah. Huh. It's but they've done really well. What annoys me about it, Jack, and you'll agree with me on this, is that they're getting millions of listeners. They're doing extremely well, making a lot of money out of it, and they very quickly doubled their content to 2 episodes a week, because when you hit those sort of numbers, you get enough correspondence every single week to do a questions and answer show. And they get basically get that easy free content every week as well, which
actually, they paywall that. Yeah. And then like with the 6-part series or 8-part series.
Oh, I'm talking about the rest of entertainment.
All right.
Yeah, but the rest is history. Yeah, they paywall the question and answer ones, don't they? And the live shows and stuff.
So has the entertainment one got a paywall yet?
No, not yet. They just have the main show on a Tuesday and the question and answers on a Thursday.
Oh, but it'll get paywall soon, man.
So we've talked about the rest of history quite a lot. I've finally succumbed to it and I'm absolutely adoring it. It's wonderful. And I recently finished their 6-part Titanic series.
Aye.
It's one of the best podcasts I've ever listened to. It's just incredible.
Some of the stories are, I don't know if we spoke about this in RBR, but some of the stories are like, were unknown to me.
Uh-huh. They were unknown to me. I'm a bit of a Titanic geek and a lot of it was unknown to me, so it's great. I did make the mistake, though, of I didn't realise they filmed the podcast as well.
Oh, it's on YouTube now. They've only started doing that the last couple of months.
Well, it came up on my algorithm somehow, and I've now seen what the two of them look like.
Has it put you off?
It's not put me off, but it's absolutely nothing like what I expected. It's just nothing like
that. Because I remember when you listened to the JFK series,
uh-huh.
You said something along the way to Tom Holland was like your, I don't want to say spirit animal, but like, I love that Tom Holland guy, and he's such a geeky looking wee gimp. And then Sandbrook is such a just middle England boarding school guy.
Yeah.
But they are fantastic historians, man.
So good, honestly. I saw a bit of the live show from this week where they name checked Martin Ramsay, and I've never been angry. I was never fucking angrier. I text them because me and Martin kind of wind each other up because he's raging that I used to be on, not regularly, but I did 4 or 5
Guardian
weeklies. Yeah. And like that's the thing that got him into podcasting. And like just to get paid for doing the Guardian stuff, it's quite cool. But now he's got that one to throw back in my face, and obviously all the other great stuff, Martin's love my books and all that. But the Guardian and Football Weekly was always the one thing that I had over him. And now he's pals with the rest of history guys, so I'm fucked.
I think when he was writing his books, like he was in correspondence with Sandbrook, because his whole gig is sort of modern history, so like 60s, 70s, 80s. So he was asking him about a lot of the stuff that was happening and or how to frame it and what was happening at X, Y, and Z. So he's been in contact with him a long time.
He's Martin's now obviously as well had articles published in The Guardian too, so he's completely through me. I'm done now. I can't wind him up anymore.
I'd rather take a shit in my hands and clap than get something published in The Guardian, man.
Oh no, I've still got my first invoice when they paid me for Guardian Football Weekly, and I'll never give that away because
was it like 5-6 grand you got?
No,
I don't tell us a number. I know the number, but
it was nothing like that.
I know,
but I still love it. I still love that it happened because I do love the Guardian. I still read the Guardian a lot. So the fact that I read
the football section. I don't particularly read any of the, especially the opinion columns.
I read a lot of the culture stuff on it. They're quite good with their kind of music and movies and culture reviews and stuff like that. They're good at all that stuff.
Mm.
Right, well, mate, that was fun today. I'm glad we're back on the wagon with the old WTM. I'm glad that people have stuck with us. I hope they've enjoyed that tonight. It wasn't a bunch of laughs, but I thought it was quite cool. I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, and hopefully if the thing that I uploaded sounds decent enough, I got scam calls repeatedly today. So a guy phoned me like 5 hours ago from 3. So I just thought I'll waste his time. So 50 minutes on the phone, fake details, blah, blah, blah. He's like, why are you wasting my time? Hung up. And then he phoned me back about 10 minutes later. I was on the phone again, 10 minutes. And then he phoned me back a third time and I managed to, how the record function on your phone?
Yeah.
It doesn't record audio, the phone calls. Because obviously that's like illegal shit. But I managed to grab my iPad and I recorded the conversation with a guy that I had for about 20 minutes.
Perfect.
And if the sound's good enough, I'll upload that as bonus content, because these scammers are fascinating.
Yeah. There's been some good stuff on Darknet Diaries about...
Are you still listening to it?
I listen to it depending on the subject.
I spoke, I fucking interviewed him years ago.
Yeah, I remember. You tried to get a wee pod going with him for when he's one of the guy or the other guys, wasn't it?
And then I lost it.
Yeah, you lost the files, didn't you?
I lost the files. Because I could have put that interview just out as an interview, but no idea.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Where the recordings went.
He's done a couple of ones where they concentrate on these dodgy contact centers. And I was at the cinema a couple of months ago and saw the new Jason Statham film, The Beekeeper.
Right, okay.
And that's based about on him taking revenge on a scam call center.
Have you ever seen the videos of scammers calling the scammer?
The guy that's got the voice changer and pretends to be the old woman and stuff like that?
I'm not 100% sure if it's him, but there's this one.
He takes over their computer and deletes stuff
It's this one particular guy. He takes over their computer.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
And fucks things up. He gets like 10, 12 million views a video.
He manages to turn on their webcams and see them and all that. He's brilliant.
Yeah, he's fantastic, man. Yeah, the guy, he wears sunglasses every now and again.
Aye. Yeah. Aye. And sometimes he's got pink hair.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same guy. Yeah.
He's brilliant, man. He absolutely takes the piss at these guys.
Aye, quite right.
Right, aye. That'll do us then.
Cool. Cheers, folks. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Colin, I personally don't think there's anybody still listening, and if they are, they're pretty hardcore long-term memory fans, and I would be expecting them to go and sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/wrongtermmemory or by clicking the link in the show notes.
Absolutely. And if for whatever reason they can't do that and paying for content isn't their bag, they can still offer us continual support by leaving a rating and a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.